Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the SuperOffice podcast. My name is Hans Christian Gronslet. I work in SuperOffice, and I'm your host. Today, I have a guest from Denmark, Charlotte Blicher, and she's CMO, Chief Marketing Officer, in a company called DigiSuite. They work with digital asset management, and she has, you know, grown out from a sales department and is now heading the global marketing department. And she has some good views on how you can build a business case for the C-suite. You know, in the end, they're signing off the contract, or they are a key stakeholder when companies want to acquire new solutions. And the funny thing was that, you know, she had one pitch to this, and that was building an internal case study or business case, while I was thinking from the sales side. So we both really have to build useful business cases to be able to advance sales or purchases into the final stage, and in the end, win the deal, which is good for the customer and for the vendor. Well, let's not wait. Let's just dig in and listen to this podcast. Thanks. You're back here listening. And today I have an exciting guest from Denmark. She's called Charlotte Blicher, and she works in DigiSuite. I think I got that right this time. And you're a chief marketing officer. Welcome, Charlotte.
Thank you, Hans Christian. And thank you for having me on your podcast. I've been listening into some of your previous shows, and I can see you've had some really, really cool guests. So definitely something for me to live up to today.
Thank you. And, you know, I like this because the ball is rolling a little bit, and then people are reaching out as well, both about topics and about guests. So this is what I like. It's a pet project for me in SuperOffice, and I think there's so much happening in the market today. So it's easy to have something exciting to talk about for our listeners. Yeah. And I'm happy about the topic today. And that's, you know, it's called how to build a business case that matters for the C-suite. I'll come back to that. But, you know, before we start that, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey, Charlotte? Why, how have you come so far?
Yeah, sure, Hans Christian. So I actually started my career in sales. So even though I work in marketing today, it was sales where I kicked off my career. And I joined a startup who was selling sales consultancy services like sales training and outbound. And that was a great start of my career because I could understand what it was to be a salesperson. So really understand what's going on in a sales meeting, what is the dynamic you need to navigate in, and having the opportunity to sit in front of different buyer personas and trying to make them aware that they have a problem worth solving now gave me some really good experience in how to sell ideas, which I think is a very helpful skill in marketing.
Yeah, definitely.
And then a few years after, I joined the IT and software industry. And that was at the time where digital marketing was the new big thing everyone wanted. Everyone was talking about CRM, marketing automation, and email marketing. And you can say it was also the time where a lot of people burnt their hands because they were building digital marketing for the first time. There was no one to turn to and ask, you know, what are your learnings from marketing automation? Because people were just starting that journey and had no clue. So you can say I've been part of the marketing space and that journey for more than 15 years now. And typically I've joined companies who need to transform, modernize, or even do a reset of the marketing function. And today I'm the CMO of a Danish company called DataSuite. And we offer a digital asset management platform, also known as a DAM. And what that does is that it helps product heavy companies who have high volumes of digital assets to easy edit, approve, organize, and get that into the omnichannel from one central platform. So that's what I'm doing today. Yeah, and we're featured in Forrester as a strong performer. So we're very proud of that as well.
That's great. And you know, that type of tool, you called it DAM, digital asset management. You know, there are so many categories that CMOs and sales managers have to navigate in. So it's good with great platforms, but you really need to make it work in a human organization as well, right?
Exactly. And I would say that one of the key components in my career has been to drive revenue through digital marketing. And you can say you need a lot of things in place to succeed. You need a strong positioning. You need to know what your value proposition is and how you differentiate. And then you need the right technology and tools, processes and teams to scale the execution. So that's kind of, you know, where my heart is and what I'm also very excited to unpack with you today. Because of course it's not only technology, there's a lot of other things that also needs to be in place to succeed.
Yeah, that's so true. So I like that when you started out, you came from the sales, you started in the sales, so you have sort of both foot in both parts, so to say. And looking today, I think that sales and marketing, you can read a lot about that in the news and in the media, that they need to cooperate more, and marketing needs to be present in sales meetings and sales weekly meetings and vice versa. And you know, when you talked about positioning, there's no way you can position a company from the marketing department without really being out in the trenches, talking to the customers and talking to the salespeople. And if you align, you get a stronger position towards your potential customers, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, long gone are the days where you do positioning in a silo in marketing, and then you do a pretty PowerPoint, and then it ends up in the drawer, and no one really knows about it. So things have definitely changed to the better.
Yeah, I actually read a book here. It was called Positioning, with a lady called April Dunford. I'm sure you know her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've done some positioning work here at SuperOffice as well. And it really brightens up everything and clears up who we are and who we are for and how we can go to market with that. So that's pretty cool. But, you know, today's, I talked about it, how to create sort of or build a business case, because in a sales process, you know, the business case comes a little down the line, right? So before we start into that, in your opinion, you know, what is the business case exactly?
That's a good question. So I think a business case needs to tie back and solve a problem that is important to the business. I think that what we see sometimes is that you have a bottom-up approach where someone in the organization has a problem they want to solve, and then they go ahead, find some tools, they look at features or functions, and they align those vendors next to each other, and then they come to their manager and say, well, I've just found this tool that can help me solve X problem and make me do my job 50% faster. I've done my research, and I think we should go with this one. It costs X amount of dollars. Do we have a budget for it? And then you see the manager go, stop. Can you please kind of go back and remind me why we need this tool and what is the problem we're trying to solve? Who in the organization will benefit from this? Have you talked to anyone else? I mean, you need to unpack that business case. So it's not only about features and functions and only solving a little problem that is only important to you. Yeah. So you need to kind of, you know, attach yourself to a bigger strategic priority in the organization.
And now you are talking sort of a business case from the potential customer side, right? Because they have realized that they actually have a problem, hopefully. And this is the sort of what we would call the buyer journey, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm very often sitting on the other side. You know, we're super office and we're selling stuff. And we're also creating sort of a business case, but from our perspective.
Yes.
So that's a really interesting discussion, because you have a sales process and that's never aligned sort of in the perfect world with the buyer process. Yes. So your pitch here is from the customer side, how to build that use case or business case.
Yes, and I would say that it's interesting you say this, you know, the sales process and the buying process, because it should be aligned. There should be two different processes. And I think one of the things we're seeing is that a lot of these buying processes that begin in companies, that they stop, right? They end with no decision. Because it's so difficult to build that case and sell internally, because the buying group is growing. There's many different stakeholders that needs to be heard and involved. And that just takes a lot of time. And that's where I see, you know, from the sales perspective, that there is an opportunity for vendors to help buyers buy, because then I think you'll see more more closed deals.
Yeah, definitely. There you go. Yeah, that's an interesting approach. We have this concept of latent opportunities and active opportunities. And to explain it, you know, when you come across a potential customer or they call you, you know, then they have this internal person who actually has a problem and is trying, or she's starting to investigate. And it's a little bit different approach, because most companies, they investigate a lot for themselves. And then, you know, some say it's like 80% you do on the web, and then you sort of know what you want. And then it's difficult to come in there, because everything is sort of carved in stone, it seems like. Yeah.
And Gartner actually did an interesting research a couple of years ago, where they found that buyers, they only sit together with vendors 17% of the time they buy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you need to share with a lot of vendors. So when you are in front of the customer, it's even more important that you add value and can help the decision moving forward.
Yeah, you need to stand out sort of like a trusted advisor.
Yes.
Yeah. And be prepared, I guess. Okay, great. So, what are, in your opinion, you know, what are the steps that are you then? What angle should we take? Should we take your buyer's use case then, or business case? Should I be the sales guy and you be the buyer?
I think it's always interesting to take the case from the customer perspective, right? And
yes.
I think what you mentioned before with, you know, a company, they may have identified a problem. That doesn't mean that they're going to buy tomorrow.
No.
But they might want to, you know, appoint someone, like you said before, to do a kind of market research, you know, and help kind of, you know, maybe build some requirements and look at what's out there. And from there, there's a very long stretch to actually get the deal signed. But I think that that the sellers here can help build, be a partner in that process, and help the company come to a decision. So I would say that if you are appointed to do an investigation, I would be looking for partners who are able to advise me on how I go about this. Because the thing is, a lot of companies, they do, you know, they buy different software for the first time. So you don't buy a CRM system every year.
No.
Maybe every 5 or 10 years. So it is actually a little bit like it's the first time I'm doing this. So from a buyer perspective, I would be open to be talking with you know, vendors who have done this before, or consultants, to get their advice on how do I go about this in the best way. Because those are also the ones that will have your back once you've bought the solution and start kind of, you know, adopting it into the organization. So I think there's no one size fits all, but I think, you know, having an open mind, understanding that technology is not about features and functions only. Mm. It's as much or even more about, you know, how do I adopt this in the organization? How do I get users to change habits and work in a new way? We know that is super difficult. And how do I ensure that the implementation of the solution is going to go smoothly? And then there's, of course, the aspect of setting some expectations in terms of what are we going to get out of this? And I think that in, you know, a few years back, many years back, you had some of these when digital marketing was kind of, you know, starting, you had vendors going out and, you know, promising that we're going to go to the moon kind of thing, right? And everyone in the C-suite, they were kind of so excited. And then when it came to execution, many got very disappointed. So I think it's about setting the right expectations. It's always good to have a vision and kind of a direction that you want to go. But then you need to break that down into kind of tangible and small projects to get to that destination.
But how do you, you know, because if you, there's a lot of projects competing for the C-suite or the executive team's priorities, right? How do you get in there? And of course, if it's a small project, it doesn't matter that much to their key objectives, then it might be more difficult. So do you have to be, in your opinion, on the, you know, the top five list in order to get that attention? And sometimes you do, I guess. And in that case, or should you break it down into smaller parts and start small and grow big?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think it depends on whether you're buying a suite or a single product or a best of breed standalone product. But I would say that the best way of getting attention for the C-suite or executive kind of decision organization is to understand where the company is heading, understanding what challenges the companies have, and being able to tie, you know, the solution into helping you achieve some of those strategic company priorities. And that's easier said than done, of course, right? But it is being very clear on that. And it's a difficult exercise. I've tried it many times before, and you often go in circles, right? Before you actually get to a decision. But if you're sitting and with a project right now and you want to build a business case that can excite the C-suite, then I would, you know, focus on the company level problems and strategic priorities. I will also start doing some, you can say, stakeholder outreach to peers in the rest of the organization to validate some of my hypothesis. If it's a solution that has impact on different functions, other functions that your own, than your own, then I would definitely try to kind of, you know, get some conversations going around this, because you cannot have something that's dumping down from the top and then now we're doing this. That will not fly. You need to, from day one, start building kind of a group of people who are on the same kind of journey and get them on the journey from the beginning.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, I think you and I talked about, you know, is it the C-suite, is it executive, or is it a sponsor, right? And you know, a lot of salespeople, they try to go high and get meeting with, you know, CFO, the C-suite directly. But, you know, in a very hectic time, that's maybe just ruining your chance of getting in there. So you need really to go down to try to find your ambassador or the person who owns this project internally and help them build this business case, right?
I totally agree. So you need to start bottom up to really understand the challenges of the company. I agree.
And we call this like a buying committee, because you might have the CMO in there, you might have even the service manager, or you might even have some super users, but you might come across some blockers, those who don't really want the change to happen. They're happy with what they have. So it's quite some selection of roles and people that you have to sort of orchestrate.
Yes. And the interesting part is that it's different from every company, right? There's no, so there's a different set of buying committee in each company. So it's you cannot go into the process with one size fits all. So that's kind of the art part that needs to take place, understanding what that situation is.
Sure. Okay, so but you have to the components then of this of the business case. You have the problem, of course, that you are there to solve. It's not always easy to get the alignment of the problems, maybe, or there can be different problems in the organization, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And that sometimes you have to sort of agree on those things before you can move on.
Yes. I think there's the business aspect of it, right? And then that is more kind of fluffy. And then you have the business case where you go down into numbers, right? That this is the cost, and this is, this is the time saved, and things like that. And to me, I've been in many meetings where you've been discussing this on different projects. And I think what you need to be careful with there is not to be unrealistic. As a way where you end up with these business cases where you save all these millions of dollars for doing this investment, and it is, as a, no one believes in it. It's these funny money kind of business case. That you should be careful with that, with those. But that, of course, is also part of the business case. But you need to get people to listen in, and buy in on the idea, and then you can go down to the kind of nitty-gritty part of the numbers and figures.
And what is, in your opinion, what is the best way to, go into the details there? Is it like, do you have some tools for it, or people have spreadsheets and calculate this like you get into the funny numbers, but you really need to, like you say, be not too excited about the big scale or the upside here, because in real life it takes time. It takes more time to after implementation to actually get all these ROIs into action.
Yes, that's true. I think that's if you are, let's say, a mid-sized company, right? Then you typically have an IT department who has some templates that they use to kind of evaluate different new projects. And I have found those very helpful. So everyone is, submitting kind of the projects based on the same parameters, which I think is only fair. And but again, you just need to take that as a grain of salt, because yeah, you can get into some ridiculously high savings that no one believes in. But I think it's a helpful kind of first step to kind of, have something where you collect the projects in a template.
I think that, I guess, finding this pain and the reasons for the pains, and then trying to put some numbers on it, it's well, maybe it's two different waves of getting it. Because if from your angle, where you have the customer, they know they have a pain, they want to fix it, they want to improve, and it's easier because they have access to data and they want to sort of share it with a possible vendor. The other side is that if you come in and you're trying to create a business case, then they might be holding back on all these informations, right? Until you have this trust that you can, so you're in the same boat, so to say, to work on it together.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I'm just thinking back on a recent customer that we acquired that they had a lot of, as they could see that there was, spending a lot of time on manual work that now could be automated. And I think the ideal situation is when the customer comes to you and say, "Oh, this is actually going to save us so much money," right? That is because, it's better that it comes that way, that they realize based on the conversation and advice and you've had with the customer that they come to those numbers themselves.
Yeah, and I guess that's also the discussion you're having with the vendor, that over time it will, if it's their own idea, right, that they can save money rather than you as a salesperson coming in and saying, hey, this is three cases that we've had and this is the how it's going to be for you as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that point, it ties back into, you know, you said something about 17% that you're actually talking to the vendor very little. So you're doing most of the talking you're doing internally within that group, right?
Exactly.
So as a vendor, you need to sort of be that negotiation or discussion partner, I guess, in between here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, great. So, but then again, you know, what matters to the C-suite? They are busy. Is it so easy? Is it as easy as the problem has to be big enough for them to work on it? Or what is actually the trigger that makes the deal go forward?
Yeah, I think that kind of reflecting on this, there's two ways of decisions being made. One is, of course, that it goes right up to the C level. And another way of kind of implementing, you can say, tools and technology is that you take a more under the radar approach, right? So maybe you have one little market or a subsidiary or a department who is trying things out, right? And who has some hypothesis on how a tool can solve some problems.
Yep.
And then you test it out and you see, oh my God, this is really working. We're getting these and these benefits. So in that way, it's easier to kind of expand that into other departments. Unless it's an extremely big project, then I think it is hard to get the C-suite's attention. And the big question is whether it's necessary. Of course, when it's big ERP systems, and but then they need to be part of it. But there's also a lot of buying that can happen kind of from the bottom up, where you kind of under the radar try different things and then prove that it works. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's, you know, like pilot projects.
Exactly.
Some of our biggest customers, they started out small,
yes.
Right? Yeah. But we also see that you have big companies, they have a corporate, they want a corporate deal, or they have a corporate strategy for something. It depends on what kind of system it is. Because you don't want five CRM or ERP systems in five different countries, then you want a solid approach for the group. So it depends a little bit on the scope of the project.
Yes, that's true.
That's
true. So what I have experienced in the past is that typically in organizations you have this group, a cross-functional group that prioritizes the IT projects.
Yeah.
Based on these, you can say templates of business cases.
Mm.
And based on that, that group suggests kind of a priority of different projects that they believe would benefit the business, and then that is what the C-suite will then approve.
Yeah. Yeah. So then they, you know, they have a...
They're kind of an advisory board, right?
Yeah, I see. Yeah. And I guess, again, that depends on the system that you're selling, because some systems are more high level and then they really want a saying on the decision. But then it is a bigger project.
And then you can say, and that's where the marketing hat comes in here, right? So, so if you are suggesting kind of, you know, different projects and vendors to the C-suite, they also need to know, you know, oh, I know this vendor, right? So there's also some branding that needs to happen alongside this process. So you're not this unknown kind of vendor in the play.
Yeah, I've had a couple of talks about account-based marketing, actually.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's one of many tactics, you know, to inform the C-suite.
Yes.
And also the important job that the account managers or the sales executives have to do in order to prepare the customer for a long journey, you know, because it's very difficult to just talk to one. You have to sort of go from different angles. enlighten people from different angles. Yeah,
Yes,
so
yes.
definitely there is a joint effort there between marketing and sales
Yeah, definitely.
and support and all kinds of the business. Okay, so having a good use case, business case is fine, but you also mentioned to me earlier about implementing stuff. How can you make yourself unique in a way that they believe that you're the right vendor? Does that have something to do with the ability to actually make it work?
Yeah, that's a good question, his question. So we've had the pleasure to have a you can say a product evangelist with DigiSuite. And what we did was that we threw that person into the sales process just before, not before signing, but in the middle of the sales process to give this advice on how you best implement and benefit from the tool that you're buying. And that person needs to. So the idea about having a product evangelist and having someone who has been on the customer side and done many of these implementations and succeeded and failed and know what works and what it takes for the organization to onboard people on a new tool. That can be that is very valuable in the sales process, already in the sales process to include that, because it builds trust and it shows that you care about the customer and you want the customer to succeed. So sharing kind of best practices on how you implement and how you get to value fast and how you adopt and so forth, I think has proven to be quite a good move.
Yeah, so that's also part of the business case that you're building, sort of.
Yeah, you can say that. So implementation doesn't start the day you sign the contract, right? You need to think about implementation way before. So yes, that's also part of building the case, definitely.
Great. Yeah, well, there's a lot of things to think about.
It's not easy, and it's getting more and more difficult, right? There was another. I'm a big fan of Gartner research, but they also do research on companies' utilization of the MarTech stack recently that showed that companies they're only using 42% of the MarTech stack capabilities, and that's also something that puts extra pressure on you when buying. Right, you need to ensure that you don't already have the capabilities in other parts of your tech stack, and that you're making an investment that will benefit the company.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we also see that, you can also like SuperOffice, they have a sales and a service stack, right? Two things in the same suite. And that's one of the arguments that we use also, that you can sort of consolidate your stack because the stacks are growing. I've seen some stats about people having 40 different solutions, right? And when you buy a new one, you might want to think about what don't I use, and how can I sort of pause or sunset a couple of solutions as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So what we typically say is that you need to identify what is your tier one platforms, right? And those are the ones that you look to first. But you need to have you typically have tier one platforms that are really critical for your business. And then having that mindset where you say it's the 80-20 rule mindset where 80% is good enough. What it takes to get the last 20% is not worth it often.
Too expensive and too risky. Yeah,
Yes.
and takes
Just
too long time.
add too much complexity as well.
But that's also a fine line discussion that you have to have with that ambassador person inside the company, because if you got this project, you might want to talk to a lot of people, and might want to have a lot of stuff in there, right? So also being pragmatic in that role is important in order to be able to succeed, because if it gets too complicated, nobody's going to use it.
Yes. And that's exactly, that's part of this expectation setting, right? Because you don't want to sit in meetings and waste time talking about the last 5%, right?
Yeah, that's yeah, the outliers. No, you don't want to spend too much time on those. Great. Okay, cool. I mean, the time is flying here, Charlotte, and we're covering a lot of good stuff with your experience here. To end it off, is there something that you want to, a tip or something you want to share with us when it comes to this? Because this could be both a tip for those who buys the system, but it could also be a tip for those who are actually selling the system on this same area.
I would say if we start with the buyers first, as I just said before about this 80-20 rule, I think that is extremely important. Don't set the expectations too high so you can't deliver. I think it's important. We've been talking about things take as it takes time to get to value. I think it's important that you get to value fast or identify those areas where you can get a quick win. So you can say the organize as the hype around the solution going in your organization. And then we haven't talked so much about it, but this change management part of projects is also important. And if you're doing this for the first time, you may think that, okay, I've sent an email, I've presented the project in a town hall. Now everyone knows what this means. They don't. You need to repeat yourself. And I usually say 7 times, but as a 10, 20 times, you need to repeat, repeat, repeat. And you need to not hide behind your emails or self-service portals. Get out there, get in front of the users and get them involved in this. And keep explaining. That's the only way to kind of change habits in the organization.
Yeah, you have to be an evangelist for the solution that you're providing, sort of. Yeah.
The big work starts when you've signed the contract. And then I would say that for this sellers or the vendors selling solutions or consultants, I would say, there's a huge untapped potential in helping buyers to buy. So that would definitely be a focus and a tip for everyone selling technology into companies.
Yeah, I think those are great tips. And very often, we go in this classic bad habit of selling something rather than listening and listening and listening and getting that empathetic view of the customer. Because if you can just tap into what they really want and need, you will have a process that will end up to your benefit, of course, if you can solve their problems. And also, like this quick win, when you start implementing it, go for, you have to eat the elephant in small pieces, and the quick wins will help you on the way getting it out to your people.
Yeah, definitely,
Yeah,
definitely.
great. So we covered a lot then, Charlotte, didn't we?
Yes, we did. It was great speaking to you, Hans Christian.
Yeah, I think it was really nice. I got some ideas here as well, and that's fun of being a podcast host because you talk to different people and you learn from different people and you can mix and match it all together. So thanks a lot again, Charlotte, and yeah, hopefully I'll have you back sometime in the future.
Yes, I'll definitely be there. Thank you very much, Hans Christian, for having me. It was good
Yep.
speaking to
All right. Thank you then. Bye.
Hi.
We had today, folks. I really hope you liked it and learned a little bit about how to build a business case. If you like it, it'd be great if you could share the episode and the podcast show with a colleague in your company or a friend. If you have some tips about new topics or interesting guests, then I would be happy if you could send me an email at hc@superoffice.com. I wish you well evening or weekend. Until next time, be curious. Thank you.